Joyce Kilmer was born on December 6th, 1886, more than 100 years ago. He was born in the great state of New Jersey. He was the son of Dr. Frederick Kilmer and his wife Annie. Dr. Frederick Kilmer claimed to fame for him. He was a worker for the Johnson & Johnson Company and is the inventor of the baby powder that we still use to this day. Small claim to fame. Young Joyce, though, did not follow in his father's footsteps. Joyce was not as interested in science and inventing. Joyce, at a very young age, realized that he very, very, very much loved the English language. He loved to read any newspapers, magazines, novels, books he could get a hold of, he would just devour. And he also found that he had a talent for stringing words together in poetic fashion, that he could be a wordsmith. He could make the English language do things that other people couldn't. He had a knack for that. He was a very intelligent young man, and his parents sent him to Rutgers Primary School, this kind of preparatory school for college, and he did very well. There was one of the editors for the newspaper there. He finished up there, and he went on to college at Rutgers, studying literature, working on his bachelor's and master's degrees there. And while in one of his classes there, studying poetry and literature and the English language, he looked across the classroom and was struck dumb by the beauty of this young lady just a few rows down from him. Now, Joyce being the confident poet that he was like, no problem. You know, I know how to win a girl's heart. And he sits there and pens down, you know, a few lines of poetry and sneaks the letter over to her, you know, and she reads it. And she was quite the poet herself. She wrote down a few lines, sent it back, and suddenly, you know, they'd go to class and they'd be writing notes to each other and passing them back and forth behind the teacher's back, you know, and everyone saw them doing this and they'd nudge each other and they'd be like, look, they're becoming a couple, and word got around campus, and it was just this very cute relationship they had. I have to imagine, so her name was Aline Murray, this young lady, and I just imagine, you know, this young poet, Joyce, hearing the name Aline, it was like, oh, all these great words that can rhyme with Aline, like Listerine and gasoline and machine and clean. I'm sure there's a poem in there somewhere. He won her heart, and after they graduated from Rutgers, they were married in 1908, this young couple. Very successful, too. He really quickly got a job at one of the local universities teaching. He taught Latin, he taught poetry. His wife was also a very accomplished writer herself. And they had their first son 1 year after they were married, Kenton. Things were going great, living the American dream on the East Coast, very successful in their careers, making an impact on the world. And things were going great. Then their second child was born in 1912. Little baby Rose. Beautiful little baby. But a few months after her birth, she was diagnosed with infantile paralysis, also known as polio. And in 1912, they really didn't have a way of dealing with this disease. It left her paralyzed, completely helpless and dependent, never able to crawl, never able to walk. And she'd be sickly the rest of her life. Joyce and Aline were beside themselves with grief. They didn't know how to handle this situation. Joyce kind of fell into a depression, actually. He felt this powerlessness. He could write poetry, he could string words together, he was a very talented man, but he couldn't handle this. He couldn't fix his little girl. One day he was walking to work, though, and on the way to the building where he worked at, there was a church. And whether out of desperation or a gut feeling, he went in. It was a Catholic church. He himself was Episcopalian. And it was the Church of the Holy Innocents. And he knelt down and reflected on that name, Church of the Holy Innocents. the story of these young infants in ancient Palestine that died shortly after Christmas. Herod, King Herod, was seeking out the Christ child, trying to kill off any contenders for the throne, and he killed off an entire generation, the holy innocents, unknowingly dying for Christ. He met a priest there, Father James Daly, and he spoke with him. He told him his situation. He just kind of laid everything out there and started asking the big questions. Why would God let this happen? Why me? Why my family? What do I do now? In the course of that first meeting, Father James Daly, you know, couldn't say very much. There's not much you can say in those circumstances. But he invited Joyce to come back the next day. Day in and day out, Joyce, on his way to work, would stop by this church, the Church of the Holy Innocents. He'd meet with Father James Daly, and they'd talk about these things. And those first seeds of faith were planted there. Slowly but surely, that faith deepened. Joyce began to realize some great truths. He began to realize that in all things, God has a plan. We may not see it at the time, but he knows what he's doing. And more than realizing that, Joyce put his faith in it. He believed it with every fiber of his being. And he knew no matter how bad things got, God was going to make it work. In these conversations and in this growing faith, Joyce and his wife joined the Catholic faith in 1913 by the hands of Father James Daly. And he wrote to Father James after the fact about his conversion. He says, "Of course, you understand my conversion. I am beginning to understand it myself. I believed in the Catholic position, the Catholic view of ethics and aesthetics for a very long time, but I wanted something not intellectual, some conviction that was not mental. In fact, I wanted faith. Every morning for months now, I stopped by this church on my way to the office, and I prayed in this church. I prayed for faith. When faith did come, it came, I think, by way of my little paralyzed daughter. Her lifeless hands led me. I think her tiny feet know beautiful paths. And you understand this, and it gives me a great pleasure to write it down." In their newfound faith, Joyce and Aline had a few more kids after that. They had Deborah and Michael, and eventually Christopher. But then another tragedy struck. This was a worldwide tragedy. World War I broke out. And Joyce found himself stuck with a terrible decision to make. He knew that America was going to get involved in the conflict. He knew that they were going to initiate the draft. And he also knew that if you enlisted early, you didn't go by the draft, you'd get better training, you'd be with better soldiers, you had a better chance of surviving, making it back home alive. And he desperately loved his family, his wife and his kids. But he didn't know what he should do. Should I go and fight and defend my country? Should I stay home with my family? Do I go? Do I stay? How do I best be a husband and a father, a Catholic and an American in this situation? He met with Father James Daly once again, asked him for his opinion. What should I do? And he prayed about it. He labored with this. Later, he wrote in his journal, "I feel the pain of my sacrifice is hard on both of us, me and Aline. But I realize also that God wills me to do my duty in this manner. And therefore, I have every reason to believe that God will take better care of my wife and children than I should ever hope to do. I have considered this step I am taking with every side, and I feel there is no doubt that I have an obligation to join the colors. I would be ashamed later on to look at my children if I don't volunteer. However other married men feel about going, I consider my enlisting as a duty I owe to my God and my country. On April 1917, he joined the fighting 69th Infantry Regiment of New York Guard and began his training over that summer. He knew he would be leaving that October. He tried to come home as often as he could, visit the family, see his daughter Rose, who was now 5. A month before he was set to sail for France, Rose took a turn for the worse. She died only a few weeks before he would leave. 12 days after her death, his son Christopher was born. And he left a week after. He made it to France in October. And it became very, very clear that he was an exceptional man on the battlefield. He was known to all around him as a courageous man, selfless, cool in combat. The chaplain of his regiment described him as the coolest man and indifferent man he's ever seen on the battlefield, not because he wanted to throw away his life, but because he valued it so much. He valued the things that he loved, his children, his wife, his country. And he was willing to die for them. He continued writing in poetry when he was in the battlefield. He saw virtue and courage where others saw criticism and cynicism of the battlefield. He saw God's hand in everything that happened, and he had absolute bedrock faith that God's will would be done. And so it was in July of 1918, during the Second Battle of the Marne in France, he volunteered to lead an expedition on a scouting mission. He had gone to Mass and confession earlier that morning. He was wearing his crucifix, and he led this band of men. He was in the very front of the column, and he crested a hill to kind of get a gaze of the battlefield ahead of them. And when his men called out after him to see how he was doing and if he saw anything, he didn't answer. They came up to him and realized he'd been shot by a sniper and was killed in combat. Knowing his character and his nobility, they took the crucifix from around his neck. And they brought it back to their commander of the regiment. And they gave it to him and said, "This was worn by a noble and heroic man." And that commander wore that crucifix for the rest of the war and handed it on to the next commander and the next commander. And to this day, the commander of the 69th Infantry Regiment wears Joyce's crucifix. He died at the age of 31, but went down as one of the greatest Catholic American poets of the 20th century. He's known primarily for one poem that I'm going to finish this homily with. It's a very, very simple poem, but so profound in its faith and its message. It's a poem that was obviously written by a great man, a man who was a good husband, a good father, a good Catholic, and a good American. The title of the poem is simply Trees. But it speaks of how simple faith can yield the most impressive results. I think that I shall never see a poem lovely as a tree whose hungry mouth is pressed against the earth's sweet flowing breast, a tree that looks at God all day and lifts her leafy arms to pray. A tree that may in summer wear a nest of robins in her hair, upon whose bosom snow has lain, who intimately lives with rain. Poems are made by fools like me, but only God can make a tree. And all the trees of the field shall know that I, the Lord, bring low the high tree, lift high the lowly tree, wither up the green tree, and make the withered tree blossom. As I, the Lord, have spoken, so will I do. Amen.